Welcome into a brand new episode of Callin' It, recording Monday, April 5th, just before noon here in Boston. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're powered, as always, by CLNS Media. Lebowitz, I've got to admit, I'm a little nervous recording an episode this early in the day, especially on a Monday, given the Callin' It curse. It just feels like something's coming down later today, but there is a lot of stuff I wanted to talk about. So it's not like we'll be short for content, but get ready. You know, if we're recording this just before noon, get ready at like 2 o'clock for whatever the big news of the day is.
Yeah, I do feel like we're due for the curse to break out. I feel a couple weeks ago, and, you know, I'm forgetting exactly what the story was.
It was the NFL draft trades.
The NFL draft trades. We waited. And finally, it was the reverse curse, I guess, for lack of a better term. And we benefited from stalling a little bit. But we're trying to get this one out of the way early in the day, I guess. And hopefully it doesn't bite us in the ass. But we are due. So it probably will, unfortunately.
But, you know, it doesn't mean we don't have plenty to talk about. And last week on the show, we did our baseball preview. And I think both of us had the consensus that we were ready for baseball season. We were excited for baseball season. We were ready to buy in. We knew the Red Sox might not be great, but, you know, we were excited to maybe see some progress from last year. None of it. None of that happened. The Red Sox start 0-3. They nearly get one hit on opening day. They get blown out by, I got to look up the name of this Orioles pitcher. I don't remember. Some, you know, generic guy. And they get swept by the worst team in baseball to open the season at home. Worst start at Fenway in 50-something years. First time they've been shut out on opening day since the 70s. They get shut out by Bruce Zimmerman, attorney at law. Right. Or just dominated by Bruce Zimmerman, attorney at law, in the sweep. That wasn't the shutout. But, you know, I know people say it's early. It's a long season. But sports, it's all about the momentum. And the Red Sox have none of that right now.
Yeah, it's important to start a season off on a good note, especially when the Red Sox were as horrible as they were last year. And also, especially when you kind of have the turning of a new leaf, and Alex Cora is back. There's this revitalization that should be prominent in that Red Sox locker room.
Should be the key word there.
Should. It's not, or it wasn't this weekend. That said, I'm not to downplay how horrendously they played. They're obviously better than that. And when you have, you know, four guys in that lineup who hit for a combined, 2-for-61 in those three games. And that includes Devers, Verdugo, Bogarts, and I think Dalbec. That's horrendous. That's awful. And you need better production out of your offense. The pitching, ironically, that game three was abysmal. Garrett Richards was horrendous. But game one and two, pitching south did its job. It's the offense that was the issue, which is kind of counter what we guess would be, you know, the way the Red Sox this season. And, you know, it's three games in, so it might still be the way of the Red Sox, but the bats need to wake up and it's just sad that, you know, in a weekend that should have been a statement weekend, going up against the worst team in baseball, arguably a team in which most, you know, outlets give a 0% chance of making the playoffs, you'd figure they would take advantage of that, and they didn't.
So maybe I'm not as optimistic as you here, but you say you trust they can turn it around, and they're not going to be this bad all year, but I don't, this is what they struck out how many times? They struck out, right, how many freaking times, and Franchi Cordero coming up in the ninth inning and 3-1 and swinging a guy who couldn't throw a strike and then striking out. But this is what the nerds want them to be. It's three result baseball. This is, the nerds will tell you, the Red Sox had a successful weekend, and in per calculations, it was all correct. They just didn't get the win. They'll tell you the Red Sox did what they were supposed to do. And that's the problem, is that they have a bunch of swing for the fence guys. I know that's modern baseball, but in the past, they had guys who could kind of carry you in between. And they had guys who could put together a single and break up a pitcher's momentum when you needed that. Right now, they have Xander Bogaerts and JD Martinez. That's it. The rest of these guys are swinging for the fences every time up. And pitchers like you saw on opening day, John Means got a groove, 18 straight. That's going to happen. There's going to be a snowball effect with this offense this year, for better or worse. I think, you know, when they hit, they're going to hit really well, and they're going to put up some big numbers in spot games. But I think if they struggle out of the gate and a pitcher gets some momentum and retires, you know, 7 or 8 guys the first time through the order, good night. Lights out. So I am a little more worried about the lineup. I didn't think they'd be this extreme with it. I didn't think it would be this much swinging for that at-bat against the Orioles closer, whose name, again, is escaping me, because the Orioles are just made up of random computer-generated, you know, programs that Ryan Mountcastle's not the name of a real person, and he apparently plays for the Orioles.
Tyler Wells is who I think you're thinking of right now.
No, right. was Valdez.
Okay. Oh, yeah, Phillips.
No, not Phillips Valdez, one of the bright spots on this team. Yeah. You know, the Orioles, quote-unquote, closer. I shouldn't have closed their roster because I'm not going to know any of the guys on this freaking team. Cesar Valdez.
Yeah.
Up there throwing 77. Can't throw a strike. Franchi swinging at everything. I be a little more traditional, be a little more cautious with it is all I would say. I will say with the pitching, though, you brought up a good point. The pitching was a surprise. I think Eovaldi having that start was very encouraging. I think Tanner Houck, I mean, you can't ask for much better from Tanner Houck in his first start of the year. He was excellent. I think he was a lot better than the numbers show. And I'll say this. I don't think this bullpen's going to be atrocious. And we talked about it last week. I think Matt Barnes and Adam Ottavino, that's a legitimate 8-9. I think Phillips Valdez can throw. I think that they have something in him, and he can be a good, you know, 6th, 7th inning guy. Sawamura, he's thrown 2 scoreless innings now, allowed just 1 hit. And then Garrett Whitlock. I think Garrett Whitlock showed you a lot. 3 1/3 scoreless. So how come, and I get they want to have this bridge guy, right? They want to do this thing where starters only throw 5 innings. You're not really pushing your starter towards 6 or 7. And you have a guy in the bullpen who 2 or 3 times a week can give you 6 outs, 7 outs, whatever it may be. And I get that strategy. Why? And they were in the situation for that on opening day, right? It was still scoreless. Nathan Eovaldi got into a little trouble, runner on first, and they make the switch. Why Matt Andrees, a career 4.5 ERA guy, was the answer there, and not Garrett Whitlock? Like, that was just bizarre to me from Cora. Garrett Whitlock has proven to be a better pitcher throughout spring training. And are they going to just value Matt Andrees for some reason?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that just goes back to, you know, having to figure out the bullpen. And when you have so many pieces that, let's be honest, not many of them set themselves above the rest. Like, there are, you have some guys who have promise, but we've seen players, you know, perform in spring training and then, you know, crap the bed during the regular season. We've seen players string together some good games and then play horrendously. And I feel like with this bullpen, half the battle for Cora is going to be to try to figure out specific roles. Who's your 7th, 8th inning guy? Who's your 5th or 6th if things go south? Who's your closer? And, you know, right now, I think the first month of the season, maybe first couple months, that's going to be the biggest challenge, or one of them, for Cora. In addition to trying to make sure that your starting rotation stays healthy. And again, the frustrating part is your lineup is supposed to be the thing that you can fall back on. But when you're getting shut out in game one, when you're only scoring 2 or 3 runs in game 2 and 3, and when your most productive hitters are off to as slow of a start as they are on the Red Sox, it's going to be hard to really pick up the slack in your pitching rotation when you're not scoring. So I don't have any problems with the way the bullpen's been managed overall, simply because, you know, I don't think Cora has much of an option but to, you know, mess with it and figure out what works, what doesn't, what guys are good in what spots, and they just have to make sure that they work out the kinks before they have an established bullpen, and furthermore figure out what additions are really necessary.
We'll see. Next time they get in one of those bridge situations, we'll see if they go to Andrees. We'll see if they go to Whitlock. Hopefully he's learned his lesson. Of course, too, I think that there's going to be a conversation soon. And I, you know, it depends what happens with Eduardo Rodriguez, right, when he comes back and all that. But there probably is going to be an opening in the starting rotation, because Garrett Whitlock wasn't just bad on Sunday. He was here's all you need to know
Garrett
about
Richards.
Garrett Whitlock. Garrett Richards. Thank you. Yep. I like Garrett Whitlock. Too many Garretts. Get rid of one of the Garretts, and it should be Richards, because here's all you need to know about Garrett Richards on Sunday, Lebowitz. I counted three times, and this is once I started paying attention to it. It might have happened before. I should go back and look. I counted at least three times the Orioles got a green light on 3-0. What does it tell you about the pitcher that this team with this atrocious lineup was teeing off on him on 3-0, had the green light to swing on 3-0? They didn't respect him. They did not trust him to throw a pitch that they couldn't hit.
Yeah. I mean, that's you're in the big leagues. It's sad, especially early on in a game. It's like, we're going to be really aggressive here because we know that this guy grooves one down the middle. We're going to be smashing it. So it's not good. And it also ruins the confidence of a guy who's not coming off of a great year either. This was supposed to be the fourth or fifth option. He's playing in game three of the regular season, albeit it's because there are injuries. And again, not a ton of depth in that starting rotation right now. But you need better. You need better. And when you have to go to your bullpen in the third inning, you're bound to lose games. So, yeah, maybe Garrett Richards isn't the guy. Again, let's give him one or two more outings. But if he can't at least give you five innings a night, and maybe give up no more than three, four runs, whatever it is, it's useless. It's useless to have him on the roster. And I do wonder if maybe an addition will be made by Bloom sooner rather than later to fill that void. Because it's going to become more and more evident. Who's on the hill tonight? It's who is it? It's Pivetta.
It's Pivetta tonight, and this is a big one. This is Bloom's guy. Bloom loves Pivetta.
Yeah,
he went out. He traded for him. He probably rushed him up a little bit. This I'm very interested to see this one tonight.
It's going to be a good one. It's going to be interesting. I mean, the guy does not have great numbers in the past, but he has a lot of big league experience. He's still relatively young. And he's going against Michael Wacha, who's a good pitcher as well. So it's going to be a good game, division game against the Rays. Night game, Fenway Park coming off a horrible series. So you hope he responds. More importantly, though, you need something out of your lineup. And there's obviously history there between Wacha and the Red Sox going back to – 2018.
Yep.
So yeah, I think all eyes are on him. And then who they got tomorrow? It's Martin Perez, who ironically might be one of the better options in this rotation, at least one of the more reliable ones in the rotation.
He's gonna be like a 4-5 ERA guy. He's a fine fifth starter, but if Garrett Richards is kind of turns out to be a bum, and then Eduardo Rodriguez is hurt, he's not your fifth option anymore, and we're right back where we were last year.
And I do wonder, like, how much pressure is going to fall on a guy like Tanner Houck to be a serviceable starter this season, and will that potentially affect his development? Because that's going to be a fragile thing as well. You want to see him out there. You want to see your prospects pitch and develop and become contributors at the big league level, but you can't rush guys. And obviously, pitching game two of the regular season, it's awesome. He responded well. But, you know, a lot of what they do is probably going to depend on how well he pitches and if he can sustain that. So a lot of question marks. And it's not just with that lineup. It's with that starting rotation as well to make sure that they can put out five serviceable guys.
So we'll see. 159-3 still on the table, obviously. And there's a lot of baseball left to be played. But, you know, we talked about it last week. There was a chance where – right, the Celtics are kind of – I know they've won two in a row, but they're sort of bottoming out. They're in flux. The Bruins, we'll get to in a minute. They're in an interesting spot. There was a and the Patriots still have some time here before the draft, and then obviously there's not a ton that happens after the draft. There was a real chance for the Red Sox to kind of capture everybody's attention. And we didn't get a real baseball season last year, and, you know, it's a summer where you can finally go back out. How nice would it be to spend time at Fenway Park, you know, get engaged with it, all of that. And – I know just me personally talking to people, a number of people are already turned off the Red Sox team. They're done. They're writing off baseball for the summer. They're out. And that's a shame because I think that, you know, a lot of people were really ready to give this team a chance and they couldn't capitalize on that.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the thing with the Red Sox. You have the past couple of years that you've had, the fan base starts losing patience. They start losing hope. I think the one solace that Sox fans can find is that we've seen Red Sox teams go from like worst to first before. We've seen turnarounds, and maybe this roster isn't up to snuff in those compared to those years where we saw them make that big jump. But you know, it's three games in. Let's wait and see. And I do think that there might be more moves to be made. And this isn't to sound optimistic at all. But yeah, Red Sox, I mean, it is to say that Red Sox fans are you know, they're going to lose their patience. It's kind of the state of Boston fandom these days. It's up to the Red Sox to change that, I guess.
We'll see. All right, let's get on to the Bruins, though, because I do want to talk about the Bruins. It's been a while since we talked about the Bruins. And that's because, you know, they were quietly good. They were humming along. I'm not saying we only want to talk about negative things, but I don't know that there was a ton to discuss. It was pretty straightforward. They were good. The top line was good. There just wasn't a massive discussion to be had there. And now it's unfortunate. And actually, here we go. Breaking news here on the pre-recorded podcast, Leibowitz. After the Bruins, last week, 2 weeks ago, maybe even 3 weeks ago at this point, they missed time because of COVID, right? They missed a couple games.
Yeah.
So this breaking news here on the pre-recorded podcast, Bruce Cassidy's press conference going on right now. It's noon. Here we go, calling it curse. We were on air. Yaroslav Halak has tested positive for COVID.
Oh, it's great because they have a lot of depth in their goaltending right now. So it's awesome.
Right. No, this is exactly what we were going to talk about, is that Tuukka Rask hasn't played. I mean, he played one game, would he play a period? And then they pulled him out, and he's dealing with some unknown injury. And first off, get out of here if you want to call Tuukka Rask soft. He left the bubble because his daughter had a medical emergency. You can talk about him not coming up in big games, but there's a difference between clutch and soft. So we're not going to have the soft conversation. And we're not going to have the clutch conversation because it's not relevant. But he hasn't played fully since March 7th. He played one period on March 25th. He hasn't played a full game since March 7th. It looks like it's maybe a back injury, maybe something like the upper back. Maybe it's the shoulders, something like that. But now you're down Yaroslav Halak, and this really good Bruins team is struggling because they've had to play Dan Vladar, who's probably not ready. And now they're going to have to go down beyond Vladar and into the next goalie. And their blue line is beat to all hell. And they don't have defensemen out there. And you have Jeremy Lauzon, who probably shouldn't be a first-line defenseman on the first line. And it's just a shame because this is a really good team. And they are kind of on the border now of the playoffs. And they're going to have to do it without their top two goalies and without most of their defenders. And it sucks.
Not only that, yeah, they played 17 games this month, the month of April.
Yes.
They have no – yeah,
I guess it's going to be 17 – no, wait. How many – does
it's 15
– goes into May, right?
Yes, it's the schedule. The last game is, I think, May 8th, I want to say. Let me check that.
May 11th. I'm looking at this right now. So the only reason I made that point is – you're talking about how condensed the schedule is. If a player tests positive for COVID, could it be condensed even further?
Oh yeah. And it's 100% on the table. I mean, if he got it, what's the contact tracing going to tell you? And who else is susceptible to testing positive? And what is this going to do to the season? They have a back-to-back. They have a game tonight. They have a game tomorrow night. And then after that, they're going to have, 13 more games this year, which includes, or this month, which includes, I think, two back-to-backs. So they have no more than one day off in between games. If there's another breakout, I mean, that's huge. And, you know, ironically, maybe that helps a banged-up team. You don't want anyone to get sick, but I don't know. It's a really tough position to be in, and it's hard to get into a rhythm once you're gearing up towards playoff time, when your starting goaltender's out, your backup goaltender now has COVID, the rest of your team is banged up and tired because they've been playing a lot of games lately. It's a recipe for disaster, and it's going to take a lot for them to overcome. And I think this next week, depending on Yaroslav Halak and how he's doing and if anyone else gets it, that's going to dictate a lot of the rest of the season, in my opinion.
And again, it becomes what is the rest of the season. And this is, you know, when we as sports fans looked at playing COVID years, right? And what was the season going to be like? What would sports be like in the age of COVID? And obviously, we all, you know, we wanted sports back, but there's this thing that, you know, what happens if you have a very promising team that just gets derailed by COVID and it's not their fault and, you know, they have a lot of talent and guys just can't play? And, you know, it's similar to injuries. That's fair. But the Bruins, I think, are kind of a case of that right now. Jake DeBrusk missed a ton of time. They're going to have this condensed schedule. Now the goalie situation could be a mess. It's a bummer because not only was this a really, I think, a good Bruins team, and I don't know that they were going to win a cup. There were, even when healthy, there were deficiencies on the blue line, and losing Chara hurt. It really hurt. But this was going to be a good team, and it was going to be a fun team, right? It was going to be – go back to – when did they play that game in Nevada? When was that? Was that like at the end of January?
Was it Nevada or Colorado? Maybe it was Nevada. That was late February, I believe. Early March.
Was it that reason? Okay, anyway. Like, remember how fun that team was? And they had the cool jerseys, and they were all dressed up like the 90s, and they were listening to Barbie Girl and all that. And they were just like goal after goal after goal on the board. They just – like, it was great. It felt ready to ride with this team. Like, I was ready. I was like, give me a run. Let's go deep into the summer. I am ready to buy into this team. And, you know, I'm not faulting them. I'm not, you know, it's not like it's with the Red Sox where I'm like, oh, I'm disengaged now. Oh, you blew your opportunity. But it's more just like, this is a letdown. It's a letdown. I was so invested into this team. And now, for reasons beyond their own control, relatively, we don't know how these guys caught COVID, but relative reasons beyond their control, that promise is just kind of pulled.
Yeah, it's tough. Again, we're still seeing the impact of this pandemic and the things that come with it and the constraints that come with it. And the harsh reality is it's going to affect teams unequally when you have breakouts and things along that line, especially when you're gearing up towards the end of the season. It's even more impactful, and it really just puts the brakes on everything. It also, for me, and this might be a little, I think it's on topic, it brings up the question of when did these leagues start trying to emphasize vaccinating their players? At this point, in a lot of these states, it's open to everybody above the age of 18.
Baseball and football are.
Yeah.
They have, it's, you know, if you get a certain percentage of your you know, whatever it's called, group one personnel, like, cause it's in terms of access, right? The highest group of access, which is players, coaches, trainers, et cetera. If you get a certain percentage of those people vaccinated in baseball and football, I know it's in baseball. I think in football it's proposed, it's expected to pass. It might not be there yet, but the plan is if you get that, some of these restrictions, the league will lessen up on the restrictions you have for COVID if you get everybody vaccinated. So I would say some leagues already are.
Yeah, you'd think so. I'm sure they're working on it, and they want to get players vaccinated as quickly as possible. I remember the NBA was discussing having their players get vaccinated as a PSA type of thing, when that was just a guise to get their players vaccinated so that it wouldn't affect the season, if we're being honest. But hey, I get it. You want to have a smooth season. You want the season to go off unhinged. But right now, in the midst of this year, your playoffs coming up, and you think the NHL specifically in a cold environment sport, right, would start to get the ball rolling in that regard. So,
well, they've got, I mean, another problem. I don't know if you've seen what's happening with the Canucks, where they have the Brazilian variant of the virus, and apparently it's bad, like really bad. Like, guys can't get out of bed. There's guys who are questioning whether or not they'll be able to play again. So that's obviously unfortunate, but you balance that. I guess that's even more reason, right?
I mean, you want to prioritize the health of these players and their families, which this does that. You don't want to skip the line. You don't want to take a vaccine away from somebody who needs it more. Again, these are world-class athletes. They're not the people who are at risk, and missing a few games is not nearly as big of a deal as being hospitalized or even worse. You have to balance and grapple all that stuff. Also, you mentioned it's Vancouver. You have the international factor. Canada is not vaccinating people at nearly as high of a rate as the United States. And I do wonder what role that plays in vaccinating players in the NHL. You have the Raptors are there in Tampa Bay, so that's not an issue for them. That's the only team that would be affected in the NBA. And maybe the Blue Jays are affected by it in some way. Point being, there seems to be a logistical nightmare that's afoot with the NHL, because I'm sure they've tried to figure this out. And now you have two teams with possible outbreaks, potentially, when the Bruins and the Canucks. And it's coming at a bad time. And it might affect these teams going into the playoffs. We saw Eduardo Rodriguez out all of last season with COVID. We saw multiple players who had lingering effects from this thing. It's not just a two-week ordeal for some people. You need to take that into account. And trying to mitigate that problem and make sure that it doesn't happen, it should be of the utmost importance. And the reality is, you know, maybe it's just too little too late for the NHL. And they just got to pick back up and be ready to go for next season and deal with what comes their way. But it's definitely there. We're not in the woods, and this could continue to be a problem, and there could continue to be outbreaks as we get into the playoffs. There's no bubble anymore, so it'll be interesting to follow.
Absolutely. And yeah, like you said, just with the playoffs this year, I think when you talk about, you know, the push to get players vaccinated, which I think is fair, it's tougher for a league like the NBA, like the NHL, which was in season when the vaccine came out, right? So they're still playing catch up a little bit, but you know, maybe that's what they do. If guys have to take two games off to get vaccinated, that is what it is, and you get everybody done before the playoffs, and there you go. But we will see. All right, real quick before we wrap it up here, Leibowitz, Space Jam 2 trailer came out. Obviously, for people your age, my age, I mean, we're basically the same age. you know, that's a big deal. Space Jam was a defining movie of my childhood, I would say, of most child people. If you're a sports fan and you're born, you know, in the 90s, maybe even early 2000s, late 80s, Space Jam's a monumental piece of cinema. And there's always the risk when there's a sequel that it's going to ruin the original. And that's why I'm being super careful about it. I don't think I saw anything I didn't expect in the Space Jam 2 trailer. I felt like it was going to be over the top. I thought it would be more than just Looney Tunes, right? Because if we all remember what was Space Jam, really, now that we're older and we can look back on it, it was a marketing tool. It was a way to sell Nike. It was a way to sell Gatorade. It was a way to sell all that. This time around, they're marketing other Warner Brothers products instead of, you know, stuff you buy like clothes and whatever. But it is kind of what I expected. Maybe, you know, some of the – I thought it'd maybe be a little more graphically the same in that, you know, the cartoon LeBron James kind of caught me off guard, right? I figured it'd be the same deal where he's LeBron James with the Looney Tunes, but not a ton of surprises for me, honestly, in that trailer.
Yeah, it is nice to see LeBron James try to take his hand at something and you know, do another yet another thing in which he'll be a little bit worse at than Michael Jordan. So that's fun. I mean, I'll watch it out of curiosity. Again, it's a childhood thing, but I, you know, part of me has gotten to the point where whenever these old movies are brought back and they try to make sequels of them, I can't even bring myself to watch it. Dumb and Dumber 2 with Jeff Daniels and Jim Carrey. Never watched that. I haven't watched the Coming to America sequel. I never watched like the Joe Dirt or Zoolander sequel, any of that type of stuff. And this is different. It's a cartoon. It's going to be, it seems like an entirely different movie from the Michael Jordan Space Jam. But it won't live up to the childhood version. I don't think a lot of movies will. I think that was so unique. I also like the aspect of the original Space Jam in which you incorporated more players than just Michael Jordan. You had,
I think that is still supposed to be a thing.
Okay, hopefully.
I think I saw that somewhere that there were going to be other players. I think they just they're trying to, you know, it's they're keeping a surprise for the trailer.
And yeah, and hopefully I do hope Charles Barkley makes an appearance again, even as an older player. That'd be great. We love Chuck.
I feel like there's definitely going to be some scene where like they have like the NBA on TNT crew doing like the pregame for whatever the final game against the Monstars or whatever they are now are, right? Like not Chuck as the Michael player. You have to have Chuck as the broadcaster.
That's true. You could have, I mean, not as a player, but like as an old timer who comes back and, you know, they can figure out a way to.
There will be callbacks. I would be shocked if there's no callbacks like that.
There's got to be. But I also think it's different because LeBron James, I will say this, LeBron James's reputation, I think, has gotten much better over the past like 5 years or so. He's still not nearly as well liked as I feel like Michael Jordan was back then. I also just don't think he's as big of a cultural icon as Jordan was. And that's for a variety of reasons, not having to do with Michael Jordan or you know, LeBron James personally. But that is a factor that plays into the appeal of this movie. And I just don't think it's going to translate quite as well as the first one. I'm going to wait and see whether or not I'm going to watch it. And that's kind of where I'm at with most movies. Like, if people are like, no, it's pretty good, fine, I'll give it a shot. But I have a feeling that this is just going to make me going to disappoint me. Like, if they were to make, like, a sequel to Sandlot, which I think they actually did.
They did. But it was really bad, and a lot of people said it ruined the original Sandlot. That's,
you see,
kind of the,
and that's exactly why I didn't watch the second one. So I didn't even know. Like, I don't want to ruin the original.
Another,
like,
one is, have you ever seen a sequel to Airplane?
I have. I think I actually laughed at that one, though.
Really?
Yeah, I think there's parts of
that. I would say
that
you don't need, if you haven't and you're listening to this, you don't need to watch the sequel to Airplane. I think it's called, like, Airplane 76 or something.
They made the third Home Alone, which it was fine. And they made a fourth one, which I was like, no, I'm done.
I don't think I've even seen the second.
You haven't seen the second?
No, I haven't seen the first in years. I haven't seen the first for probably like 10 years.
Wow. The second's very good. I think the second's on par with the first, to be honest. Great. Both are great movies. It's one of the rare sequels that is good. It's going to be fine. I think that said, in all fairness, this is going to be better than most sequels. It's going to be good enough. Like, the production they're putting into it, I'd be surprised if it's not great. Like, Warner Brothers has good writers. Like, they know how to make this stuff. I think a lot of it just comes down to my opinion of LeBron James at the end of the day, which is not very high.
Yeah, it's not so much about LeBron. It's just, again, that original is such an important part of my childhood that, you know, you're putting a lot on the line there if you go and watch the second one and they recon it, or what's it called? When they change something from the past in a future movie. You know what I'm talking about? Star Wars did it. It totally bummed me out.
A plot hole type of thing? Or
so when something in a sequel changes the context of the original, right? I think it's called reconning.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that sounds that's brutal. And that ruins, that affects the reputation of the original, right? So that's not good.
Yeah. Or like Back to the Future did it. I'm trying to think of some like specific examples. I can't, but I don't know. I'll probably end up watching because I love Looney Tunes in general. That was like my first favorite TV show. They're all, by the way, on HBO Max. I just discovered that.
Oh, really?
It's killed my productivity. Oh, they're all on there. And it's not like you have to scroll through full episodes. It's just like the 5 minute, you can get the individual ones. So I'm just going through Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner. Coyote Roadrunner. Coyote Roadrunner. Coyote Roadrunner. Bugs Bunny and the Opera Singer. Coyote Roadrunner. Coyote Roadrunner. Like, I can pick the ones I want. Marvin the Martian. Yeah. It's excellent.
And I wasn't a Looney Tunes guy. I never
really
watched. The only thing I watched was, I think we've discussed this before. The only real connection I have with Looney Tunes is Space Jam. And I think that's the case for a lot of kids. Looney Tunes was like big when I feel like our parents were kids.
Right, that's the thing. My dad was like, "You should watch this. It's great." See, like we watched a ton of it.
You see, my dad
Looney Tunes and the Three Stooges.
That, yeah, I was just gonna say, my dad did that with Three Stooges. He didn't do that with Looney Tunes though. So I had an appreciation for Mo, Larry.
Well,
and
Curly. So did you see the Three Stooges movie?
The one with Will Sasso and those, I did not.
You whatever know, that one was a couple years ago.
Yeah, Larry David played a nun. I never watched it. I heard bad things. Was it good?
I don't know. I didn't see it either, but I didn't. I got.
I love Will Sasso. Will Sasso, I think he played Curly, and he is one of, I think, the most underappreciated comedic actors in the world. The guy is so funny. Great follow on Instagram if you don't follow him, but hilarious, and he was in it, so I should watch it out of support for that guy, but I never did. And it's also a Farrelly brother movie, and I love the Farrelly brothers. They're
Why didn't you watch it then?
I don't know. I never did. And it was
it
the same thing,
like you being worried about ruining the like aura of the Three
Stooges. No, because it's so different. I mean, you're talking about something that's black and white compared to something that's like a brand new movie. And also I didn't watch the second Dumb and Dumber. It's the same director, and I love the original of that too. So I feel like I lumped those two together, and I was like, I don't want to do this to myself because the disappointment will be too overwhelming.
Fair enough. I'm also just lazy with movies. Like, I'm so bad about, like, we were talking before we came on the air, that Eric Andre movie. It's been on Netflix.
Yeah. Right?
And I like Eric Andre. I think the Eric Andre show is pretty funny.
Probably yeah.
Like the ranch skits. Like I would, his stand up was good. Like I would watch that, but I just have it because I'm really bad about movies. So as
that
we've
one I'm gonna watch this week. How about this? We'll watch that movie, and then next week our next episode we'll have a segment on.
I'll see if I can get it. I'll let you know if I can get it in this week. I'm down to do
all
it.
Right.
But go ahead.
Yeah, I'm watching it. I gotta watch it by the end of the week. I said I was gonna do it last week. This week it's happening.
I will see if I can pull myself away from the mock drafts. As I don't know if you've seen on Twitter, I'm now getting chastised for doing too many mock drafts.
You're the mock draft king. I mean, there's so many, and I saw today that who is it? The Falcons are open to trading the 4th overall pick. So you got a lot in your hands. Do not envy you.
I mean, like I have fun doing it. It's just, and then it's funny because like I do it, and in my last one was up on 985sportsup.com. Like I thought I did mock drafts are not wish lists. I think people have this misconception, like why would you do that? It's like I wouldn't. I'm trying to predict what the Patriots will do. Some guy DMs me, right? Mm-hmm. Let me actually pull this up word for word. This dude legit DMs me. He was that offended by my mock. He goes, did Bill Belichick write your mock draft? It's gross.
And that's replied, a compliment.
Wait, so I replied, the point of a mock draft is to predict and project what the Patriots are doing. So I was kind of going for a Bill Belichick vibe. He goes, I can't believe you have your job. That was horrible.
You see,
well,
there's.
I did exactly what the point is. You're admitting I did what I was trying to do. Like, do you want me to just throw out a wish list? Because I can, but nobody learns anything if I do that. Y'all know the top prospects. I'll trade all the picks for the first pick. That'll be my mock draft.
Can I make a guess right now? Just an educated guess, and I'm going to guarantee that I'm right. This person who messaged you this, they don't have their real name or a real photo of themselves in their profile, do they?
Their name is just Scott.
Okay.
And I think they've since changed their profile picture. Because it's something I don't want to get people looking for this guy.
Yeah, but it's not of the person probably.
Well, so right now it's a pretty recent sporting event, like recent as in since he DM'd me. I have a screenshot of it because I sent it to somebody. Nope, it was a sporting event before. He does have husband-father in the bio though.
And father of three girls, and then tweet something outrageously sexist. Those are great.
He does not have the so he checks some of the boxes. Yeah. But he does not have the father in the bio. But yes, just a first name, and the picture is of athletes. It's not
and you know what? I gotta say, like, I feel bad for people who do that behind like aliases, or they don't have their actual picture in their bio, but they're overly aggressive to people who don't even know the person who's attacking them. Like, at least put your face and your name to it if you're going to be
easy.
If you're going to be mean to somebody or try to call someone out who's just trying to do their job and doing something that's like the grand scheme of things relatively inconsequential. You don't like his mock draft. It's sports, dude. Like, the people who get into sports media get into it because it's a fun. Sports is fun. It's a good thing. You know, like, people just take things so personally and like to bring stuff to a level that's completely unnecessary. And, you know, that's frustrating as is. It's even more frustrating when they do it, behind a computer screen under an alias. Like, it's just so cowardly, man. I just feel bad because, like, what's going on in your life that you're doing this anonymously to a person you've never even met before? Just crazy. It's crazy.
And that's not even some of the emails I get. But you know what? If it gets them through the day, whatever. I've kind of learned to let it roll off. There's just some twisted people out there. You got to let them do what they want to do. Again, mock drafts, predictions, not wish lists, not what I would do. But I also haven't won 6 rings. So maybe if it seems like a draft from the guy who's been very successful, albeit he hasn't drafted great the last couple of years, maybe stick with that. But
I'll say this. I appreciate the work you're doing, and I like the stuff. You and Evan are doing some great the podcast you guys are doing.
Oh, this was awesome. This wasn't even on that one. This was on my 98.5 mock draft. The stuff me and Evan get on the live ones is actually – so it's funny. So I did that one that I thought was super realistic and got ripped for it. And then later that day, this was on Thursday, me and Evan did one of our live ones, and I thought we had a horrible draft. I mean, the draft just got away from us. It was a mess. And people were like, yeah, I'd be into that. It's just proved. Most of the people on Twitter are just morons.
But how many actual drafts are like that? In like front offices, you know, it's like, this did not go the way we wanted. We didn't expect this team to pick there and that team to pick there. And
I've always wondered, like, when it's trades, draft picks, like, whatever, do you think, because, you know, like, when you're sitting around with your friends, you're like, you know, should we, where do we want to go for dinner? And eventually somebody's just like, F it, let's go here. Like, all right, so that Niners trade, right, with the Dolphins, and they're trying to trade up for three, they're trying to give up all this, and maybe the Dolphins are asking too much. Does somebody in the room at some point just go, you know what, yeah, whatever, let's just do it?
Yeah.
It's, like, do they have that moment?
I'm sure. I mean, I do wonder, like, what's the most childish way they've gone and picking, like, a draft, you know, a draft pick or whatever? Like, you have a split in the room. Did two guys just go rock, paper, scissors? Did they flip a coin? Like, I guarantee you it's gotten to that point in an NFL draft room. Like, it's had to have. Or do they go with a trade?
I mean, I'd assume it's seniority at this point. But I mean, course. More like, if you're debating, it's probably all seniority. I not even for, like, reporting reasons. I would just love to be a fly on a wall during the NFL draft or like, the MLB trade deadline or, like, something like that, just to kind of see how this works. Like, that up close.
Yeah, it's probably a lot less formal than people would think. But these guys also have been doing it for so long. It's secondhand. It's their job.
Oh, for sure.
So, you do wonder. But I would think that most teams have, you know, their own priority lists. They kind of have an idea of where things are going to go. And most of them execute at least a portion of their plan. It's just a matter of if it works out or not. So, it's so unpredictable. You have no idea what's going to happen. But it's still fun. And doing those mock drafts seems like a blast. I'm sure it's time staking and it's probably, it can be a little tedious, but you guys are doing a good job with it.
Well, that's part of the fun in it, is it's so immersive and you really just, like, dive into it. So
only how many days, when is it, April 29th or something?
Yeah. So we got, between now and then, I think I'm scheduled to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more mock drafts between 98.5 and CLNS between now and then.
We'll see. And there's still Jimmy G, although it seems like.
Right. And then I could have to adjust because of that. And it's going to be a ride. I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited to follow along with all your content.
Appreciate it. 98.5sportshub.com. Get it all there. Yes, sir. All right. I'm glad we almost ended on one of those movie just spirals.
Yeah.
We were able to pull it back this time, but that is going to do it for this episode. We'll be back next week. Maybe we'll actually talk about the draft instead of just, you know, mock drafts. We can actually have a draft discussion, stuff like that. Maybe the Red Sox turn it around. We will see. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter @CallingThePodcast and check us out online at clnsmedia.com. Until the next one, for Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.